Hey, sit down listeners. You can find us every Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the number one ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, that's now a half a club longer, in TP5X, you'll be playing a golf ball that performs like it was built just for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks, you can personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Head to TaylorMadeGolf.com today to find the number one ball for you.
Hey, what's going on there, pal?
We saw you at the hockey game on.
Do I know you guys?
I'm Ryan Whitney. I got a drink named after me.
Not a big deal.
Pink Whitney? That's what I thought. See you, fellas.
I invented the thing, you pigeon.
Pink Whitney for legendary moments.
Welcome to the Sit Down, Crime History Podcast presented by Barstool Sports. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a crime history podcast presented by Barstool Sports. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. This is episode 82. Getting after it here after a truly historic episode last week. I got so many comments and well wishes after the interview with Sammy Gravano. Whether you like Sammy or not, it was an interview we had to have, and I hope you enjoyed the time we had that we got to spend with Sammy. Look, he is a violent, depraved individual in his former life, and I thought he told his story really very well. Now, I had a lot of people mention, you know, why didn't you ask certain things? Probably going to speak to Sammy again at some point, and we'll make sure we get all the questions answered. It's important, I think, you build a relationship with somebody, and hopefully I'll get to ask him those questions. But we did super well from a listening standpoint here on iTunes and Spotify on the pod. We put it on YouTube. And if you haven't seen the video version, please go check it out on our YouTube channel. You can find that on YouTube just by searching The Sit Down, a crime history podcast. Also, make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at Sit Down Crime Pod. I know I talk about this every week, but I'm truly proud of this show. We continue to do very well. And another great show planned today, as always. We're going to talk today about Tommy DeSimone. And many of you know that name from the obviously historic film Goodfellas. We're going to tell the rights and the wrongs about Tommy DeSimone today. But before we do that, I thought it's been a while since we've done a Q&A. We haven't done a Q&A really probably in like 10 or 12 episodes. It's been a long time. We've had a good run of episodes. Obviously, you know, we did the Sammy interview, and we've had, you know, other great episodes that we've done at Barstool, including, you know, Chapo Guzman, and we interviewed DA agent Leonardo Silva, and we've talked about Bill Cotolo and Gene Borello. We've done Johnny Rosselli. We've had all sorts of shows, but it's been a while since I've done a solo show. So, I think it was the first one we did on Chapo Guzman when we came to Barstool. So I thought I would get the audience involved this week. And I know I always get the occasional person, I don't want to hear a Q&A. Again, you're welcome to fast forward in the description of the video. I went and put the timestamp as to when the biography on Tommy DeSimone begins. We're going to get to that in just a second. But let's get to your Q&A. I always like to involve the audience, get questions answered, and just going to go a little different for 15 or 20 minutes. Let's get it started with Chris on Twitter at CRimbo1888. He asks, I think Sammy was a snitch long before he flipped on John at the Metropolitan Correctional Complex. He was rarely on wiretaps like John was and informed the FBI where John liked to talk, apartment above the Ravenites, so that he could get out, rid of him, and take over the family. Thoughts? That's untrue. I've actually spoke to John Gleason, the AUSA that actually brought Gotti down. I read his book, The Gotti Wars. From what I understand, the FBI was able to figure out all that stuff just through putting two and two together as far as the map and outline of the building. I don't think it's too super difficult to understand where he was going to talk to somebody, considering that the apartment that Mrs. Cirilli stayed in above the Ravenite was pretty small. And actually in the book, John Gleason talks about that. As far as Sammy being a snitch, I don't agree with that. I think Sammy just decided, like he said in the interview, he kind of described as to why he cooperated. I guess I understand where you're coming from. Do I believe it? No. I don't think Sammy was a snitch long before John at the MCC. And again, if I did, I would tell you. I don't. Sam J. Fast 95 on Twitter. Just a general question. When is Blackjack coming back? Well, he's not. I feel like I've answered this question like many times. Blackjack hasn't been on the show for months. And will he come back maybe at some point? Actually, probably. I mean, we'll probably have him on over the next month or so, maybe before Christmas to do an episode. But Blackjack's not on this show. Blackjack hasn't been on this show for a pretty long time, quite honestly. I actually talk to Blackjack pretty frequently. He's just got his own things going on. He's got a company that he's running. And he's just got a lot of day-to-day plans. And, you know, it's funny because we talked about the Sammy interview, and he obviously mentioned, you know, look, it was important that I did it, and he loved it. So maybe we'll get him on at some point, but is he coming back on the show? No, not for an extended period of time, maybe just for a one-off episode every once in a while. Jersey Girl 713, a great listener of ours. She says, do you think that there's a difference between what Sammy Gravano did and what Michael Franzese did as far as cooperating? No, I've said this before and I'll say this again. There is no difference between Gravano, John Alight, Michael Franzese, Gene Borello, Frank Pasqua, Bill Cotolo, John Gotti Jr. No, they all spoke to the government about other people. Okay, that is a blatant violation of Omerta. Now, in the Bill Cotolo and Gene Borello's case, it's a little different. They were associates. They were not made members of the mafia. That being said, they still cooperated and, you know, at least in one instance, took the stand. I'll say this about Cotolo. I know a lot of people call him a rat. I think by definition, he's probably the least of a rat, at least in my thought. He wasn't a made member. He didn't cooperate on the stand against anybody. I think he was basically, as he talked about, look, they killed his father. I think he's a different general case. That said, all of them are the same and they're no different. I have no issue. They do what they do. That's their business. But Michael Franzese did the same things. Michael Franzese was a cooperator for over a year. He cooperated against a person called Norby Walters. He cooperated against a janitor that worked at a company that he was a part of. You know, just doing what he does today is cooperating as far as I'm concerned. You have to understand, guys, that when you are a member of the mafia, you take an oath to never speak about the existence of the mafia. And we've moved the goalposts over the years as to what a rat is. It's, oh, well, initially it was you don't speak to anybody. Or B, it's, well, you can talk, but as long as you just say you're in the mafia and nothing else, that's okay. Then it became, well, you could talk to the cops. You just can't put anyone in jail. And then it was, oh, well, you can actually talk to the FBI, but as long as you don't sit on the stand and identify people and put me in prison, you're not right. It's like, well, no. The general discussion is if you talk to the police or the FBI under any circumstances, admit you're in the mafia or even admit there is a mafia, that is a blatant disrespect and violation of Omerta. So to answer your question, Jersey Girl, yes. I don't believe there's any difference between what Sammy did, what Michael did, what any of these people do that are part of the mafia and cooperate. At Ryan Eva, he asked, do crime families pay police to work for them like in the really good television show Animal Kingdom? If you haven't seen that, watch it. Awesome. I loved it, about a crime family in California. Okay, so I've never seen that show. As far as do crime families pay police to work for them? Absolutely. That's common knowledge. Al Capone paid off allegedly half of the Chicago Police Department when he was in control of the Chicago outfit. That's been going on for years. That goes on in New York, that goes on in Philadelphia. The truth of the matter is, man, that most beat cops, most cops in precincts don't make that much. And you can go to a cop and say, hey, you make 50 grand a year. I'm willing to give you 2,000 a week to, you know, shut up, or 500 a week or 1,000 a week. Just to, hey, not drive down this street today. So, yeah, that goes on very often. Absolutely. And we've even seen instances instantly, like the show we did, Ryan Eva, and this was a very early show. I think this was the third episode we did. There are police that actually one up that. They didn't just take money. They started killing people for the mafia and getting information on people. So absolutely, that's been going on for forever. And I don't think that'll ever stop. I mean, quite recently, there was a Boston, New York City involving the Genovese and Bonanno crime families. There was a cop in the indictment. He was a dirty cop. So, yeah, absolutely. That goes on a lot. A. Kello on Twitter says, was Tony Salerno aware that he was being made, in essence, the fall guy for Chin Gigante in the commission case? Yeah, I think obviously I'm sure he knew that. But I think for him and for Chin and for Tony Carallo and for all these different guys that were those old school gangsters, that was the life. That was what they were on the planet to do, be gangsters. And the truth was, Fat Tony Salerno, even though he was, in retrospect, kind of the underboss in a way, he was the second in command, he ruled the commission, quite frankly. Paul Castellano, he made decisions over him. He made decisions over other members of the commission. Yeah, I'm sure he could have said, you know, when he was arrested in the commission case, yeah, I'm not the boss, that guy is. But that's not how he was built. He was never going to be that guy. So yeah, I'm sure in his head he knew that. And if you've ever heard some of the wiretaps, he discusses that with Tony Carallo, how, you know, Vincent's this, Vincent's that. But that's not the kind of guy he was. He was never going to point fingers and be like, oh, I don't know why I'm being this and that. In that life, you do what you're told and you, you know, take it like a man. So yeah, I'm sure he knew it, absolutely. But he was very powerful in his own right. He made a lot of money. And I think in his thought, you know, whether it was him or John Gotti, whoever, there was only two ways. You were going to die in jail or die by the gun or the knife. And that was the oath they took. And I've said before, I think there is something that is respectful about that. I'm not going to say that they're not evil people, but there is something, I think, respectable about taking your punishment as a man if you choose to do things. Michael Yeeney says, what are your thoughts on Jackie DeNasurcio? Are you ever going to do a show on him? What about the Westies episode? Are the Westies still around? So a lot of questions there in one question, basically. Okay, let me start first. Do I know who Jackie DeNasurcio is? Yes. Jackie DeNasurcio was involved in not only the Philadelphia mob, but also the New York mobs and Lucchese crime family. He was very close at one point with certain people in the Lucchese's. He also had a foothold in Pennsylvania through being part of the New Jersey crew. He was pretty close with Anthony Assaturo, if you know who that is. They actually made a movie about Jackie DeNasurcio. I want to say a big name actor. I forget who played him. Might have been Bruce Willis or somebody. I don't know. Who knows? But yes, will we do a show on him? I don't know. Maybe at some point. There's a pretty good book that I believe he's talked about in. I read it years ago. Something about, you know, the guys in New Jersey or something. I forget exactly what it was called, but yeah, I definitely know who he is. I know at one point he acted as his own lawyer in one of his cases, and I believe that's what the film is mostly about. But yes, I know who he is. As far as the Westies, yes. You know what? I actually probably will do a Westies episode over the next week or two. You know, the reason I never did a Westies episode is I'm trying to get TJ English on to come speak about the Westies. TJ wrote a book about them and is really the foremost authority on the Westies. As far as are they still around? No, not that I know of. Hell's Kitchen is pretty built up now. It's a far cry from the, you know, the place it was many years ago. But you know, Jimmy Coonan's still around. I mean, he's still in prison. And if he's able to outlive his sentence, he will get out. I believe he's scheduled for release in 2030. So, yeah, they're definitely they're around. They're not still active, though. Not like we knew them. Are there maybe a few people still around, you know, that resemble an Irish mob or something? Sure. Absolutely. In honor of your weekend gaffe, I think you should do a top five mobsters who went against their respective families. If there are five, maybe ones that survived. So yeah, what Joseph Hartzell is talking about is, over the weekend, I, made a little mistake at Barstool, and, some people were saying that, that doing a mob show, I should know that I shouldn't go against the respected families. I'll have to come up with a list. You know, thinking off the top of my head, you know, mobsters that went against their respective families, they most likely died. So Carmine Galanti, people like that. But that's a question that I honestly, I didn't even see here. I usually kind of look over these, but I didn't even see that one. But any of them, I mean, Sammy Gravano, I mean, I think you could put him in there. You know, Mikey Scars, you know, there are guys that, you know, were big time mobsters that, you know, Joe Bonanno went against their families. They all decided to either write a book or cooperate or whatever. You know, sly question, Joseph Hartzell. Brooke X, at Chillin' Brooke _ on Twitter says, what do you know about Tough Teddy Rowe, and will you do an episode on him? No, I'm not going to do an episode on Teddy Rowe. I actually spoke about him in the Sam Giancana episode. And you can check that out. We did it on YouTube. It's on our podcast feed. Teddy Rowe was a black individual who was very involved with the numbers racket in black Chicago many years ago. He was a big numbers guy, had a huge empire on the South Side. He would work. He actually worked initially for Big Ed Jones, and he ultimately took over that racket. He got into a beef with Sam Giancana. Giancana basically said, "Hey, look, get lost," you know, to Big Ed Jones, and Jones decided, you know what, I'm out. But Jones, you know, decided that he was going to leave, but Rowe didn't want to do it. He went to beef with Giancana. And he actually ended up killing one of the outfit heavyweights, Fat Lenny Caifano, whose brother Marshall Caifano was connected to the mafia. Ultimately, Teddy Rowe was killed in a heap of bullets. Pretty interesting guy. He was a huge money man, you know, big in the numbers racket in black Chicago. And anybody that knew him, even his enemies, respected him. I know at one point Giancana basically said, look, you know, whether he's black, white, whatever, that bastard went out like a man. He had balls. It was a fucking shame to kill him. But the truth is, when you do not get down or lay down with the outfit or the mafia in those times, you were going to be killed. It's pretty simple. So will we do a show on him? No, but we in essence already did do one when we did the Sam Giancana episode. Good question, though. Kenneth Lundgren says, not a question, but request. Can you do more work on the Philly mob and Philip Leonetti? Sure. I mean, I guess I'm not sure what else you want me to do. I mean, I've done Nicky Scarfo. I've done John Stanfa. I've done the Philly Mob Wars. I've talked about Joey Merlino. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe DM me as to what else you'd like me to do. I'd love to speak to Philip. I don't think we ever will, but I'd like to.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Great show. Love to listen every day. What do you think the mob would look like if Lucky had never took control from Salvatore Maranzano and Joe Masseria and they had stayed in power? That's a good question. I don't know. I feel like at some point they would have to start kind of doing some of the new world stuff and not just treat it like an extortion racket and start to do other things and branch out. You know, obviously they were involved with bootlegging and things like that. I would think it probably would have matriculated into something else, but that's a great question. I don't truly know. Obviously Lucky Luciano basically created the modern day mafia for what it is. It's a good question. I guess for me, I think I would probably answer it like anybody else. I would have to think that I would hope that eventually they would try to kind of change their views and realize that they need to get into new world things. But it's a good question. I've thought about, you know, kind of we've been asked a similar question with like, if Prohibition hadn't happened, what would the mob be? I still think it would have happened, but you know, who knows? This is what a question. If Salvi Testa doesn't get killed by Scarfa, do you think Philip Leonetti flips or even Nicky the Crow and Tommy Dell? And then he involves Scott Bernstein. Any thoughts on the question? Salvi, according to Scott, if Salvi isn't killed and Nick stayed on the same behavior trajectory, I think Salvi and Phil team up to kill Nicky and take the family for themselves. The rank and file would have lined up behind them. I couldn't agree more. I've always said, you know, Salvi was incredibly underrated, and it's a shame that he didn't kill Nicky, because I think he could have won Philip's support on that. And I agree, the rank and file would have absolutely fallen in behind. So I don't even need to answer that question. I think Scott did a very good job with it. And the truth is, Scott is the man to ask because he wrote Mafia Prince. So yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Matt Zilla, if Anelio Della Croce had become boss over Paul Castellano, do you think John Gotti would have ran things differently? Bonus, does Castellano get whacked if Della Croce is boss? Well, I think we have to remember, like, regardless of whether Neil was around or not, Gene Gotti and Johnny Carniglia and all those guys and Angie Ruggiero were all selling drugs. And that was there regardless of whether Neil was around. It was a blatant violation of the rules. Now, do I think Neil could have, you know, kind of continued to win John over and kind of go to bat for him to Paul? I guess. But again, I've said this before, Paul was always going to become boss over Neil. It was family, it was related, and Carlo always kind of had that figured out. The only way, now I could say this, maybe if Neil would have killed Paul and been on board with Gotti, yeah, I think that could have happened because Neil was the only one that wouldn't break the rules. Do I think Gotti could have, you know, got him to buy in? Maybe. But yeah, I think he could have reined in Gotti a little bit for sure. And that was evident because Gotti didn't make a move until Neil was killed. It's a good question, but the problem that John had was the Angie stuff, the Gene Gotti stuff, the selling drug stuff. That was a rule violation by John. Remember, he had broken the rules before, you know, killing people that, you know, he wasn't supposed to and shit like that. So yeah, absolutely. All right. Giancana's girl says, is there still a measurable Italian mafia presence in New York City? If so, where are they the most active? Well, I will say this, Giancana's girl. We did an episode, I don't know, maybe 20 or so ago with Scott Bernstein, where we actually talked about the entire country on what families are still around and which aren't. So I would definitely recommend checking that out. It's also on our YouTube channel, The Current State of the Mafia in the Country. As far as where's the mob today, they're pretty much in the same areas they were in before. You know, obviously there's still the mob around in Bensonhurst and, you know, a lot of parts of Brooklyn. Obviously a lot of them live in Staten Island now, you know, Queens. I mean, they're still pretty Bronx. I mean, they're everywhere, Manhattan. As far as where are they, I mean, that's a loaded question because they're in all the boroughs. I would say the only borough they're not in anymore is Harlem. I mean, there's really no one else in Harlem now. But and Harlem's really not even a borough. It's just part of Manhattan. So I would say outside of that, I mean, they're in Little Italy. They're in the Two Bridges area. They're in Jersey. They're in, you know, Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx, you know, go up towards Pelham Park, you know, Country Club, you know, up that way. Yeah, I mean, they're everywhere. Well, listen to the show we did. I think you'll learn a lot more. Why did so many Midwest mafia families go defunct? There seems to be a lot of opportunities to make money and also stay out of the spotlight. So curious why so many are no longer around. Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out which ones you're talking about. I think a lot of it had to do with just, you know, I mean, Chicago and Detroit are still around. As far as the littler cities, you know, Cleveland and Pittsburgh and, you know, places like that, I would just say that, you know, they were small and they eventually died and there was no one to take over. That's a good question. I never really thought about that. There really wasn't much of a mafia presence anywhere else, though. I mean, Minneapolis didn't have many people or, you know, Des Moines, that was really Chicago, St. Louis, mostly went to Chicago, Milwaukee, you know, it was all kind of one. So it's a good question. A lot of families went defunct, though. And I think that just had to do with the fact that a lot of the rackets that they were doing aren't needed anymore. You know, the industry is gone, that kind of thing. If Nadu was born in the Bronx in the 1950s, would he have become a wise guy? I'll say this, probably not. I know that my family, I've always had good parents. I think today, if I didn't have good parents, I could have become a drug dealer or something else. So yeah, I think that has to go with your family and extended family. And, my grandparents were good people. They were good neighborhood people. And, they taught me right from wrong. So I don't know. It would be hard. I guess I'd have kind of like the Calogero Anello feel where, like, I'm not going to lie, when I was younger, 17, 18, 19, I was infatuated by, the John Gottis and the Joey Merlinos and stuff. So, yeah, I guess it's hard because when you live in the 50s in the Bronx, I feel like that's, regardless of whether you have a good family or not, that's just what everybody did. But if I would have been a wise guy, I would have been more like Frank Costello, not, Roy DeMeo. Though I guess you never really say never, right? Ludacious says, will you ever do an episode on the Russia Mafia or Yakuza? No, probably not. I mean, I might do figures in that group, but not as a whole. I mean, that would take days probably to do an entire show on that stuff. But yeah, I mean, we'll do certain people possibly. But there's so many people to get into. And like I said, I want to get in a little bit to some of the other crime that goes on. We did an episode a couple of weeks ago on a guy called Armin Mivis. I mean, he was a serial killer, basically. I would like to get into cartels and serial killers. It's hard because so many people just want mafia shows. And I guess occasionally you want to delve into other things. But, we'll maybe do certain people at some point. Miko Texas says, how is there not more information on CIA asset Danilo Blandone? He was the real Rick Ross plug. Well, I mean, Rick Ross has talked about him pretty frequently. I mean, he's brought him up a lot. And I think you kind of answered your own question. Why is there not more information on CIA asset Danilo Blandone? Because he was a CIA asset and they don't want you to know anything about him. but I'll look into him. I'll get you some good stuff on him. When are you doing an episode on the patriarch of crime family from Providence, Rhode Island? Probably soon. We'll get to Raymond Patriarch at some point. Obviously, he's pretty important, so we'll definitely speak to him. Marvin Reyes says, Frank Matthews is a big-time drug dealer that not people talk or even know about. He made a lot of money and also had problems with the mob. Matthews was supposed to do time but disappeared and was never seen again. Yes, we know. We did a show on him. Guys, listen, it's important that you check out our catalog. We've done shows on a lot of the people that you're discussing. Yeah, we did a show on Frank Matthews. Do you think he's still alive or was killed? I've said many times I think he's still alive. He's pretty old, and I think he's probably living in Africa or in the Caribbean somewhere. He's incredibly interesting, and it's kind of crazy that more people don't know about him. Yeah, absolutely, I think he's still alive. In fact, most of the people that worked on the case believe he's still alive. I don't know what he's still hiding from. I mean, all the stuff is completely past the statute of limitations. There were no murders, and most of the people involved are now dead. So that's kind of interesting as to why maybe he could be dead, because I feel like we would have heard from him by now. All right. You are Dr. Frank N. Stein. Oh, that's funny. You want to create the ultimate undead gangster from body parts from dead mobsters you've exhumed from mafia burial grounds. Which deceased mobster's body parts are you harvesting to create your own super gangster? Brains, strength, heart, etc. Okay, wow. That's a wild, very interesting question that we make strictly for these Q&As. All right, so brains, I would go with, who would I go? Who was very smart? I would go with Arnold Rothstein as far as brains, even though he was Jewish. He was a real Italian mobster. Strength, I would go with, I would go with John Booby Sirisani. A lot of people aren't going to know who that is, but he was a Bonanno crime family soldier. And people in the Motion Lounge crew would talk very openly about how strong he was, like a very strong, just solid individual. Maybe Greg Scarpa as well for strength. Just seemed like a bull. Maybe Sammy the Bull. Heart. Who had heart in the mafia? Who went down like a man? Sonny Black? Sonny Black, maybe? So a lot of Bonanno crime family people there. As far as evil thoughts, I'd probably go with Tommy Patera. hands, I would go with Tommy Patera. That's a good question. I feel like I did a good job. Arnold Rothstein, Sonny Black, and Greg Scarpa for strength. I feel like he would just be a strong guy. But Bubi Sarasani, because I remember a Lefty Guns mentioned how strong he was at one point in a wiretap. He couldn't believe how big and strong he was.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, final question. In all of your research, have you found anything linking the Mafia to any major horse races? To be honest, I've never really researched it. I don't know that I really need to, though, because absolutely. I mean, the mob has been around horse racing forever. We've talked about the racing wires and all sorts of stuff. I guarantee you they've meddled around in fixing races and all sorts of stuff. Absolutely. That's definitely going on. I've never actually researched it and looked into it very much, but I would have to imagine so for sure. I'll look into it. Maybe we can find more on that. Great questions, guys. Honestly, really good stuff. It's always great when we can interact with the audience, and those were pretty good questions. So we was about, 30 minutes? So, yeah, I'll make sure if you're still here or you're already listening to the episode, you can always skip through if you don't like the Q&A. That's a good thing about podcasts. You can skip through and listen to what you want. But let's, everybody, get into our biography this week. I want to speak about the very interesting Tommy DeSimone. And we obviously know Tommy from the character that Joe Pesci played in Goodfellas, the 1990s movie that really just is a classic. We all know it. Tommy is a very interesting story, so let's get into it. Quickly, before we do that, though, make sure you check out our channel on YouTube where we talk about everything crime and the mafia. We did a video recently on a death in the world of the mafia, on a guy called Tough Tony Federici. So go check that out on our YouTube channel. But let's get into it. Tommy DeSimone on the sit-down. Thomas DeSimone was born May 24th, 1950 in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Now, we know Cambridge being that it is a suburb of the city of Boston. And really, it's kind of interesting because a lot of people don't know that Tommy DeSimone actually wasn't born in New York. It is important to realize, though, that he was pretty much born into mob royalty. Tommy DeSimone's grandfather was Rosario DeSimone, who, if you know anything about the West Coast Mafia at one point, the mob was very involved in L.A. And Rosario DeSimone came from an area of Sicily called Salaperuta. He would initially settle in New Orleans, then go to Colorado, and then he established a close connection with a guy called Vito DiGiorgio in Los Angeles. And when he died, DiGiorgio, in 1922, Tommy DeSimone's grandfather, Rosario, seized control of the mafia. And he had multiple sons, Tommy's father, who ended up not being a mob guy. He was just a regular guy that owned a business. Now, Rosario's son and Tommy DeSimone's uncle, Frank DeSimone, was a lawyer for a very long period of time. And he would ultimately take control of the L.A. Mafia at one point after his father. So there are a lot of connections between Tommy DeSimone and his family to the Mafia. Now, Tommy DeSimone would have two brothers, Robert and Anthony. And they were ultimately two people that got involved with the mafia as well, particularly in the Gambino crime family. DeSimone's parents could never really reel him in. The blood that he had was deep, and he wanted to be a gangster. At 15 or so, DeSimone would actually end up meeting a guy called Jimmy Burke, who we've talked about. We've done an episode on. Jimmy Burke was the Jimmy Conway character. And one thing about the film that is very true is Henry Hill would actually become an associate of not only Paul Vario, but Tommy DeSimone. And they would actually begin together through mentorship from Jimmy Burke, selling stolen cigarettes, hijacked cigarettes. And they were making hundreds of dollars a day. And that was very valid. If you remember in the film, Tommy DeSimone, who's played by Joe D'Onofrio, runs into the space and says, "Hey, they just pinched Henry." That actually happened. They were real cigarette sellers. Now, the one thing we would learn very early about Tommy DeSimone in real life was he was a hothead, short-tempered, trigger-happy lunatic. It was said that Tommy DeSimone loved weapons. He loved guns. He loved knives. And really, by the age of 17, he was allegedly committing murders. Now, there is a story that there's a rumor in 1967 that DeSimone at one point killed an individual called Howard Goldstein. Now, there's not a ton of proof of that, but Henry Hill actually discussed that at one point. Now, whether we believe Henry Hill or not, there is rumors that he killed as young as 17, by the age of 17, which is crazy when you think about it. You know, all these guys that we talk about, you know, they're obviously involved with the mob, or maybe they're running numbers or something, but killing people by your teens is pretty crazy. But that was the truth. Tommy DeSimone was a short-tempered lunatic who had a fuse that when you got him going, he was just going to fucking kill you. By the 70s, Tommy DeSimone started getting involved in truck hijackings, just like in the film. We remember they would come up on a truck, basically pay the guy to give up his shit. They take the load, and that was that. And they were doing everything. They were hijacking. They were doing extortion. They were fencing stolen goods. And the good thing about Tommy DeSimone is not only did he like to do all those things, he was an earner, but he was willing to kill people as well. And we've talked about that before. When you're someone like Tommy DeSimone, you have the mob in your blood. Your grandfather was a gangster. Your uncle was a gangster. You're now a gangster. If you can do all these things and you can do them well, earn and make money, and you could put a gun in somebody's head and blow it off, you're going to be very valuable to the mafia. We obviously know that throughout DeSimone's life, he would be very connected with Jimmy Burke. And that would really start pretty early as far as big scores that they were making. At one point in the late 1960s, Air France was a huge carrier of American currency. And they got the bright idea through a guy that worked at the airport, a guy called Robert McMahon, who worked for Air France. He was in debt to the mafia. So he goes to Jimmy Burke and says, "Hey, look, I know of some cargo that's coming in from an Air France flight, and I'm your security guy. How about I tiff you off? Everything will be good. You guys all make away with some money. I get a cut, and you forgive my debt." And that's exactly what they did. Robert McMahon, on April 7, 1967, basically says, "Hey, look, here's the flight. There's going to be between $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 in cash. All you got to do, go pick it up." It's pretty simple. It's the easiest money the mob would make. And on the day of the robbery, Tommy DeSimone and Henry Hill drove to Kennedy Airport with the suitcase empty. And Hill would claim that it was the largest he could find, the suitcase. At 11:40 p.m., they entered the air cargo terminal. McMahon suggested that they just walk in, as people often came to the terminal to pick up Law's baggage. DeSimone and Hill would enter the unsecured area unchallenged, unlock the door with a duplicate key, and using a small flashlight, they found seven bags, which they loaded into the suitcase and left. They would take $420,000. No alarm would be hit. No shots were fired. And most importantly, no one got hurt. Now, the theft would not be discovered, good thing enough, until the following Monday. So by then, they were way off. And what did they do? They chalked it up, made a ton of money. Keep in mind, $420,000 in 1967. Remember, that equates to basically $3.7 million. And they chalk it up. Everybody gets a piece. That's a lot of money for a young kid. Remember, Paul Vario said that in Goodfellas. That's a lot of money for a young kid. Now, there are a lot of things, as I said, about Goodfellas that are valid and true. involving Tommy DeSimone. One thing we would know and is notorious is the murder of Billy Batts Bentvena. Now, Billy Batts was a real person, William Bentvena. A lot of people don't know this, but in 1962, Bentvena had been involved with the Gambino crime family. He was a big-time drug dealer, sold a lot of heroin. He was part of a group called the Ormento Group. Now, it's named the Ormento Group after an individual called John Ormento. John Ormento was a huge heroin trafficker for the Lucchese crime family. He, alongside Carmine Galanti and Ernesto Abamonte, all these different guys, they all worked together in a group called the Ormento Group and sold tons of drugs. I'm talking huge amounts of narcotics. Bentvena was very involved with that operation. And in 1962, he gets hit with a 15-year sentence, the same sentence that Vito Genovese got and all those guys. It was all one group. So Bentvena goes away. In 1970, he gets out of prison. What do we know from the film? In the film, they have this party, and you know, he starts making some wisecracks about Tommy DeSimone. A couple of things we also need to know about Bentvena. He is very close to John Gotti. He's very close to the Bergen crew, all those guys. So this guy was a very connected individual, as we know in the film. What we know would happen is he makes some wisecracks to Tommy. They kill him. Now, a lot of people do believe that it wasn't just the fact that he made wisecracks. When he got out of prison, he was basically not doing as good a job as Jimmy Burke was doing with his loan customers. So Jimmy Burke basically said, you know what? Fuck this guy. Let's just kill him. Nobody will find out. We'll be good to go. They bury Bentvena in a dog kennel upstate, okay? And Jimmy takes over the loan business. Now, this was all good for the crew, the Vario crew, including Jimmy Burke, Henry Hill, Tommy DeSimone, because DeSimone continues to earn, he continues to enforce, he continues to do what he is supposed to do as a gangster. Now, he also continues to kill people, most notably, okay, as we know, we discussed Billy Batts. We're also going to discuss the character Spider. We've seen that character in the film as well, played by Michael Imperioli, a very young Michael Imperioli. Michael Gianco was his real name, and he actually was a real person as well. He was a little bit more, let's say, advanced than the film portrayed him as. The film would portray him as this goofy waiter of sorts that was just kind of a coffee donut guy for the mafia. Not necessarily. Michael Gianco was actually not just a gopher. He was actually a very accomplished thief. He was particularly good with stealing cars and things of that nature. And he actually was very important to just kind of the day-to-day runnings. People like Michael Gianco, Stax Edwards, all real people, and were all important to the day-to-day runnings of mobsters, crews, and things as associates. Henry Hill would call the killing of Gianco a psycho move because it's exactly what happened. He was insulted by Gianco, and he just killed the kid. And this would continue this wild, short-fused temper of Tommy DeSimone. It wouldn't stop there. In 1974, he would again kill someone connected to John Gotti. Now, it's important to remember the John Gotti connection. In 1974, Tommy DeSimone would begin dating a woman with the last name Giroth. Her brother was a person called Ronald Foxy Giroth. Now, Foxy was an associate in the Gambino crime family, very close to John Gotti and the Bergen crew. He was a stick-up artist, hijacker. And at one point, DeSimone would assault the sister of Giroth. Giroth is pissed off. He hears about it. He asks DeSimone to come over. They have a conversation. And what do we know? Another body turns up. And again, this is continuing to slap John Gotti in the face, basically. You just killed Bentvena, which they don't know about, but now you're starting to kill more people, and it's all coming back to you. This is stuff that when you continue to spit in the face of the mafia, doesn't matter what family it is, eventually they're going to just get rid of you. It's pretty simple. And this is why today cartels are so successful. They are powerful enough to just get rid of you, and nobody cares. And that's how this group was as well. And that's where the mafia, as we've talked about time and time and time and time again, were so successful. And all these people that were in the Vario crew, whether it was Tommy, whether it was Jimmy, they were all very important to the Mafia because they had that ability to earn, make money, and fucking stick an ice pick in your neck. It didn't matter who you were. So again, DeSimone is starting to make a lot of enemies by killing all sorts of people. And as we know, by the late 70s, DeSimone and Burke come on the obvious huge Lufthansa heist. And I want to kind of walk you guys through the Lufthansa heist just a little bit here. But before I do that, I do want to get in to the fact of not only was he killing enemies of his, Tommy DeSimone, but he was killing friends of his. At one point, Jimmy Burke would order the murder of an individual called Remo Cersani. Burke would get suspicious about Cersani and later find out that from context in the DA office, that he was talking to the NYPD. So DeSimone, alongside Burke, met Cersani at Robert's Lounge, a place that they used as a bar slash social club. They told him, let's take a ride. DeSimone would strangle Cersani with a piano wire. Now, Henry Hill would say in his book, Wise Guy, quote, Remo put up some fight. He kicked and swung and shit all over himself before he died. Burke and DeSimone would take Cersani's body to a bocce court next to Robert's Lounge. So they're just getting rid of whoever they need to. But again, this is how the Mafia continues to make tons and tons of money. Getting rid of people that are rats, that are betrayers, and that don't do what they say. And that builds the reputation of being ruthless, depraved psychopaths. In December of 1978, as we know, the huge Lufthansa heist happens. And I know there are going to be people that don't know what the Lufthansa heist was. Basically, and essentially what it was is very similar to the previous robbery. They would find out that a huge cash shipment of jewelry and cash was at Lufthansa Cargo Terminal Kennedy Airport. Burke, alongside DeSimone and other members of his crew, were able to make off with it. And they all did it pretty simply. And they all had jobs, right? Eventually, once the van they used to do the getaway was fulfilled, they had someone to take the van and get rid of it. They had people to do everything. Now, subsequently, weirdly enough, the van was never actually properly disposed. And the individual that was supposed to do that, a black individual called Stax Edwards, who's played by Samuel L. Jackson in the film, he actually was killed. He got high. He was a petty criminal. He was very good with credit card scams. And he used to hang out at the Roberts Lounge. He didn't do what he was supposed to do by getting that to a junkyard belonging to the Gotti crew. And they got rid of him. Now, all in all, if the Lufthansa heist, the Vario crew ended up making off with about $6 million. $5 million cash and about $900,000 in jewelry. Now, think about this. That's equivalent today to about $25 million. So think about that. Through two heists with very little work done, they made $28 million just in two heists. Think about that. This is why, guys, we talk about these people. Okay, they're truly incredible criminals, quite frankly. As I said, the murders didn't stop because DeSimone single-handedly killed Stax Edwards. Now, the good news was going to start coming to Tommy DeSimone because what did he want, right? He's born in, you know, the early 50s. By this point, he's almost 30 years old. His whole life, he had the blood, right? His family, they were mob guys. He had worked alongside Jimmy Burke and Paul Vario and all these big-time gangsters. The goal of any gangster, you want to get made, right? And again, like the film, there are a lot of accuracies about the film. He believed that he was going to get made on January 14th, 1979. He gets picked up by two individuals, Bruno Facciola and Petey Vario. Petey Vario was the brother of Paul Vario. Now, it's widely known that the last place Tommy DeSimone was seen was in the pizzeria with Facciola and Petey Vario. He's taken to a home, and I'm going to get into what would go on next. for Tommy DeSimone. Now, I want to make this clear. In the film Goodfellas, they do not tell you what actually happened truthfully to Tommy DeSimone. They basically just say it was payback for Billy Batts. And that would be very valid. But it was also payback for Foxy Giroth spitting in the face of John Gotti. And we don't ultimately know in the film who actually killed him. And to this day, we actually don't actually know who killed Tommy DeSimone. But I'm going to give you what I think actually happened. And I think the most accurate possibility of what happened through the actual kill to where he was buried to everything else. Now, what most people believe is John Gotti was in the room. The actual killer that night was a guy called Tommy Agro. Tommy Agro was a lethal hitman for the Gambino crime family, killed a lot of people, very violent and depraved individual. And they didn't just kill him. He was tortured. They tortured him. And I'm not going to get into the particulars. But again, when you are killing people to the height of Bentvena and people like Giroth, eventually the powers that be are going to go to the other powers that be and say, listen, Jimmy Burke, this guy's a fucking mess. And we're going to take it out on you. So either you give us him or you're going to be involved. And I think Jimmy Burke did it as a manipulation tactic. He knew Tommy was a loose cannon. Everybody knew it. Paul knew it. Everybody knew it. And I'm sure Jimmy and Paul met and said, listen, we just got to get rid of this guy. Let's serve him up to the Gambinos. We wash our hands of him and nobody finds the stink of from us. And that's exactly what they did. Jimmy Burke was a master manipulator. It's that simple. And I thought that's one thing about Goodfellas that was so vivid is that truly the Jimmy Burke character played by De Niro was exactly how he was. He was in a manipulative lunatic who had a lot of smarts. And he knew that Tommy was just a tragic figure that was way too big for his britches. That was just a loose end and we had to get rid of him. And what did they do? They got rid of him. And guess what? No one ever found out about Jimmy Burke's connection to that. Now, ultimately, to Tommy Agro, it wouldn't be the only DeSimone he would kill. It's actually very much alleged that he actually killed the brother of Tommy DeSimone, Anthony, as well, who we would find out was a rat. Now, Agro at one point would joke that he should kill the other brother to make a trifecta, kill all three of them. Now, I want to talk about where his body would end up. Like I said, I think Jimmy Burke was very much unified with the Gambinos that he had to go. And I don't want anything to do with this. It was Tommy. He did it. Now, we would find out some interesting things about what would ultimately happen to the body of DeSimone, according to an individual from Philadelphia called Greg Bucciarone. Now, Bucciarone is a reformed criminal at this point, from what I understand. He would speak to the Philadelphia Inquirer and other Philadelphia newspapers about his seedy and shady past. Now, again, this is just one claim. He would claim that he saw Tommy DeSimone's body at a scrapyard in Kensington in Philadelphia, and that it was to be crushed in a car at a scrapyard handled by a mob associate called Richie Bildstein. According to Bucciarone, they just compacted his body in a trash salvage dump. Now, there are also people that say that Tommy DeSimone was cut up with a chainsaw and dumped in the ocean, which is very possible as well. Do I believe Greg Bucciarone? I don't know. I mean, he doesn't come off that believable. But either way, Tommy DeSimone was killed. We don't and will never truly know what actually happened. And that's the crazy thing about mob history. There are a lot of things that go truly proven or non-proven. But I think one thing is safe to say about Tommy DeSimone, he was a guy who learned from some very smart people, some people that were very mafia connected, and guys that were truly, you know, great teachers. But in the end, they were just better manipulators than he was. Tommy DeSimone was pretty green. He was only 29 years old when he was killed. That's why this biography is not very big, because he didn't live very long. Tommy DeSimone at the time of his death was, just south of 30 years old. It wasn't like he was 70. He was 30 years old. But he was used. And this is what mafia and cartels and all these different people do to young kids. They don't care about you. They will use you for what you're for, and they will spit you out just like you're Tommy DeSimone. He was a fall guy. He was a nut. Now, he was a good gangster for probably 10 years. You think about his career, right? He had a 15-year mob career. Pretty long, quite honestly. You do something 15 years in any line of work, that's a long time. And he died when he was 30. Not even 30. Think about that. Again, though, he was used and manipulated by very smart people. And in the end, Jimmy Burke lived much longer. Jimmy Burke lived into, the 90s. That's Tommy DeSimone. Pretty short story, but a story that should be filled in with some other things. He was just as big a lunatic as the film made him out to be. He was a good gangster. He was someone that listened. I don't think he completely went off cold cocked, sometimes like the movie portrayed him in. But I think one thing about Goodfellas, we have to realize it is very valid. It is very truthful. It's very evidence-based. A lot of this stuff actually happened. But I did want to play a little bit bigger part as to one person and what he actually did, some of the other things he actually did. Now, we can get into semantics and we could talk about all the characters. But DeSimone is really one of the more tragic figures. But in the end, we won't shed many tears for him because he killed a lot of people. He killed, according to a lot of people, an innocent individual on the street when he was 15 years old. A woman that was connected to him called Teresa Ferraro was killed. He was just a bad dude. And he was used by badder people, quite honestly. That's the show for today. Look at that, just south of an hour. 30-minute Q&A. About a 30-minute biography. And guys, again, I wish the biography were longer, but he didn't live very long. He basically has a 15-year run. So there's not a ton to get into. But, and I know a lot of the stuff we know from the film, but it's cool to tell some stories about some of who these people actually were. Ben Vena and more about the Lufthansa heist and what ultimately happened truly to Tommy DeSimone. As always, if you're checking this podcast out for the first time, listening on iTunes, Spotify, wherever, make sure you leave us a review, leave us a rating, let us know what you think of the show. I appreciate it. I'm not the best with criticism, but I try to take everybody's opinion and kind of go from there with it. If you'd like to reach me, you can email me at thesitdown777@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at sitdowncrimepod. Also, as I always say, go check us out on YouTube. Guys, again, all I ask is that you support us. That's all I ask. Go check us out on Twitter. Check us out on YouTube. Hit the like button. Subscribe. Leave us reviews. Doesn't cost you anything. By the way, if you're a young person out there, you can also check us out on TikTok. Yes, we are on TikTok now. You can find us at the Sit Down Crime Pod on TikTok. I've got a guy handling our TikTok now. We just created it. We already have 702 followers. And you can find some videos and things of that nature there. So we're staying up to date on social media, folks. We are always powered by Barstool Sports. Thanks for listening. I am Jeff Nadeau. We will see you next week here on The Sit Down.